Welcome to Juno Afternoon. With sunshine and greener days here, we're off to a great start this week. I'm Rhonda McBride. Ahead, the results from a senior survey that's done every 10 years, some surprising trends for Juno's senior population. The city and borough of Juno is looking for some folks with a good head for numbers to serve on a very important board. And our conversation continues over three initiatives to limit cruise ship traffic. Now, the forecast. Tonight and tomorrow, mostly clear, with patchy fog late at night, as well as early in the morning. Lows in the upper 30s with highs in the upper 50s. Light winds picking up out of the northeast to 10 miles per hour in the afternoon. Juno Afternoon will be right back after National Native News.
Hanson Gress, ka eat with the shoe ye, we kashuk a ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakaya ha ane kak, gunish cheesh.
Welcome to Juno Afternoon. Thank you for being here with us today. I'm Rhonda McBride. You know, numbers are not everything, but sometimes they give us interesting snapshots of what's going on or what may happen in the future. The Juno Economic Development Council and the Juno Commission on Aging have partnered up to survey seniors. They ask them a range of questions about what they will need in the coming years. And joining us now, Paul Douglas with the Juno Commission on Aging and James Chen, a researcher with the Juno Economic Development Council. I want to thank both of you for taking time out to help us understand the significance of the survey. And maybe we could start off with you, Paul, telling us, you know, what this means to the city and borough and perhaps the nonprofits that serve seniors.
Okay, first let me say that this survey we've just completed and have available now for the world to look at is the fourth iteration, and it's been going on every 10 years. And CBGA has encouraged the Juno Commission on Aging to undertake this survey to monitor how seniors perceive the available services they need to support themselves as they go through their retirement years. And what we have attempted to do with all these various surveys, the questions are pretty similar survey after survey. And so we measure any progress or regression of perceived services and quality thereof as we go along over these years. And it's intended to help both the CBGA assembly people to understand what the needs are of seniors, as well as other social service providers in the community to better understand how to deal with the senior community and what their perception is of what they need and need more of.
Well, I want to go to James Chen because you are a fairly young person and you're crunching all this data to help us understand what it means. Did you have any aha moments looking at this extensive survey?
I definitely had a lot of aha moments in looking at this survey. And even looking at things past the survey, just, you know, in my regular job, I look at Juno's population. And one of the things I noticed is, wow, the senior population, those 55 and older, has been the one age group that's been consistently growing for the past 20 years here in Juno, which highlights the need for the research such as this to address the citizens' issues. That among just learning about things that, you know, I will eventually come across.
Well, I guess we all get there eventually. Eventually, this becomes important to us as we grow older. But, Paul, what things has this research been used to do? I know you said it's really good at setting a baseline as to whether things are improving or deteriorating, but how do you anticipate this data being used?
Well, if you go back in history a little bit, one of the early, I don't remember, was the first one or the second survey, clearly indicated the need for some senior housing, and Fireweed Place was a result of that in large part. Today, we are hopefully within a month breaking ground to build a senior assisted living facility out in the valley. And again, from the last survey, a lot of, the same basic information, need for housing, senior friendly housing, and or assisted senior housing, always comes to the top of the pile. And so those are two examples that I'm very familiar with, that show that doing these kinds of surveys does have a positive impact on what the community can do. There's still a lot of room for improvement, and that's what we attempt to identify through the survey. And then the Juneau Commission on Aging submits all in this report, and along with our recommendations, to the City Assembly for their thinking and potential action. And we're trying to make life a little bit easier for them if we can, and find ways to encourage them to pursue some of the areas of perceived need by seniors.
So tell us about some of the surprising bits of information that are on there. When you compared the data from 10 years ago, there's some changes.
James, you want to?
Yeah, sure.
You did a lot of the data analysis. Yeah.
One of the biggest changes, and probably one of the more important ones, is the use of a computer. Mm-hmm. Of the survey population, 98% of our surveyed population regularly uses a computer and has access to a computer. And it was about 89% about 10 years ago. So that's a pretty big jump in just 10 years. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I noticed is juniors, senior population is very active. Over 80% of Juneau seniors are physically active at least once a week. And half of those are doing some sort of activity every day. And those range from a number of things, from just simply walking to doing water aerobics or hunting. Tai Chi was another popular activity that seniors did.
So that's really interesting that Juneau has seniors that are active physically and on the internet. I mean, how does that compare to other places?
Well, I don't have I can't tell you. I don't know. James, maybe you know. You have some feelings, but
I think that's something, though, Paul, that we can feel good about.
I think you're right. No question about it. I think it's something we want to continue to encourage in our senior population. And to the extent that we collectively can do things to make it easier for seniors to stay involved in those kinds of positive activities, as well as encourage those who are coming into the senior age group to get involved and stay involved. I find personally, as a senior, it's very refreshing to be able to do the things that I do with the number of nonprofit organizations that I'm involved with as either a board member or whatever. And it keeps me younger than I probably would be otherwise.
And I guess that's important to point out, that a lot of Juneau seniors are busy giving back. Like, they haven't really truly retired in the sense of sitting on the sofa and reading novels and not being very engaged. That doesn't seem to be the case.
Well, go ahead, James.
Yeah, that's definitely another thing that we saw in the survey was over the course of this survey series is a steady increase of volunteerism. I think it was about 8% every 10 years. It was a growth of 8% every 10 years.
Boy, that's a very positive snapshot of Juneau's senior community. How about in terms of wealth? I mean, how are you measuring financial security, home ownership? How is that figure doing?
Yeah, more and more seniors are owning their own homes as time goes on, and that is a positive thing. That doesn't mean, and you know, I think you said something at the beginning of the program, Rhonda, about the numbers, and it's how it's not always about the numbers, and that's one thing to consider. Maybe a lot of seniors are owning their own homes, but that doesn't necessarily mean there are people that are not in trouble there, like having to sell their homes to pay for cares, things like that.
And that probably, Paul, is an important part of the planning and things that you would like the community at large to take a look at. It sounds like a lot of this survey is geared towards finding out how seniors can continue to stay and not have to move away.
Yeah, I've been preaching for years that the whatever we can do to keep our seniors right here at home, their experience, their intellectual contributions that they can continue to make as seniors are invaluable, in my humble opinion, and it's something we need to encourage and support the best way we can.
Being a recipient of that, I will also agree.
Well, I think it gets to be a struggle for seniors because they all, at a certain point, they're less able to stay in their own home. They have challenges. They need some help. And the family is often dealing with a stubborn person. I worry. I'll be a stubborn person for sure for someone to deal with. Oh, no. But I guess that's part of the planning, right, is to figure out how to give people better options, safer options, and still stay home.
Well, and one of the things that the survey identifies each time we do it is there's a very strong need for a larger community of in-home caregivers that can go into the home and provide limited services for those who do want to continue to reside in their own home. And it, just a little bit of help here and there goes a long, long way to supporting these people, and then they can continue to make their contribution and they can be comfortable in their own homes. And it's something that this survey pointed out as one of the major areas of need is better support services for in-home care.
Now, one of the things that I have heard assisted living facilities say is that oftentimes seniors don't make decisions in time about those other options. And if they make them in time, either get the assistance they need or move into assisted living, that they can avoid some of the things that automatically sends them to a nursing home or a facility that they don't want to be in. Do you think that might be the case here in Juneau, that those options are not quite in place yet?
Well, that's part of the reason, yeah. But seniors thinking that way and acting that way is not unique to Juneau or any other individual community. As I mentioned early in the show, you know, we tend to get more stubborn the older we get. And it's a challenge to get seniors to recognize that they're on the edge and they need to consider an alternative. Now, part of the solution to that is to have adequate alternatives for them to consider. And that's hopefully this new senior assisted living facility is going to be a head start, a major head start. It's the only one in town, and it doesn't even exist right now. And that's a, you know, that's a terrible thing to have to say, but it's true.
That's another benefit of having this survey is it does serve as a reminder. And we saw that in a lot of the written comments in the survey, like, thanks for reminding me. I will be thinking about it.
Well, that's good that these surveys like this do keep things on the front burner. And I do want to mention that you can find it on JEDC's website, right on the front page. It's a beautiful mm-hmm. survey, beautiful graphics. It does take some time to go through, but do you expect it'll be up there for a while for people to look at?
Oh, yeah. It'll be up on our front page. And eventually, you can always find it in our research library as well. And I believe you can also find it on the JCOA, the Juno Commission on Aging website.
So before we go, can you tell me, in a nutshell, what is the big takeaway from this report? And we'll start with you, James, and then we'll leave Paul with the last word.
Challenges for seniors in Juno continue to be the same challenges for seniors in Juno. Affordable housing, and that goes for everyone, but seniors especially. Specialty medical care is also a big reason that seniors tend to leave Juno and can also be a cost burden for them as well. Mm-hmm. And keeping support services around and providing additional support services where they're needed. That's how we can help seniors stay here and enjoy living here.
Paul?
Well, James summed it up quite well, really. I've been involved in talking about some of these issues for at least 15 years now, not only for Juno Commission on Aging, but through other nonprofit organizations that I've been involved with, SAIL being one, and United Human Services, who are attempting to put together, raise funds to put up a building to house multiple nonprofit centers. So individuals who have needs, including seniors, which is a big chunk of those totals, can go what we like to refer to as one-stop shopping. Because frequently an individual who needs something from one agency also needs something from the other. And if they're in the same building, it just makes a lot of sense. Provides efficiencies of service to the providers, the nonprofit providers, as well as the convenience to the individuals who are being served. And I have been spending too many hours, days, and years working on these projects, so that, you know, I'm not surprised with any of the results that we find in these surveys, actually.
Well, I want to thank both of you for joining us, coming on Juno Afternoon to share some of this data. And again, you can find the full report on the JEDC website, the Juno Economic Development Council, right on the front page. So thank you, Paul Douglas with the Juno Commission on Aging, James Chen, a researcher with JEDC. Thanks, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. The city and borough of Juno is looking for a few good folks to take some responsibility and help out. They need to have a good head for numbers, a sense of logic. Now, that person probably would not be me. I was never good at math. That's why I got into journalism. But anyway, for those of you who enjoy math and like to apply it to real life, we've got the manager of the Juno City and Borough here to tell you about what he needs you to help him do. So welcome, Rory Watts.
Thank you, Rhonda. Thank you for having me on. We have, so of the many things we do at CBJ, a big core function is revenue collecting through property tax and sales tax. And every year on property tax, we have a process where property owners, if they want to disagree with the assessed value of their property, they can appeal it. And we have one of our boards is called the Board of Equalization. And that board hears appeals from citizens. And they'll hear the city assessor and the property owner. And maybe the assessor is saying, here's what I think the property is worth and here's how we valued it. And the property owner might have a different point of view. And what really we're interested in is equity. We are interested in everybody paying a fair portion of their property tax. And so we've got some spots on the Board of Equalization, and we're looking for people that like to solve problems. Math and logic would be the skills. If you've ever bought and sold a house, you're qualified in all likelihood. So that's the issue I'd like to talk about today.
So is that a volunteer stint, basically?
It is a volunteer stint. So we have dozens of boards and commissions at CBJ, and this is one of them.
Because this seems like this could take some time, I mean, to go through all that. It's number crunching is never really easy.
It's a little bit of time. So it's time intensive at this time of year. So our property tax follows on a normal calendar. So January 1st, the assessor by state law is required to notify or is required to value properties as of January 1st, required to notify people several months later. Then people have a month to appeal their value. And then if it's not resolved informally, then we have this kind of formal process that goes to the BOE, as we call it, the Board of Equalization. So we expect this year a couple months. We have a higher number than usual number of cases, and it's probably worth explaining why and what's happening with that. So this year, the assessor determined that CBJ had been undervaluing commercial property and specifically commercial land. And so the assessor made a global adjustment to the value of commercial land. And in a normal year, we don't get too many appeals and most of them resolve. And in this year, we probably have maybe, a normal year, we might get 100 appeals and maybe three goes to the BOE. And this year we have around 300 or 350. So a little more than normal. And that sounds like a lot, but we do have 8,000 properties in the borough. So that means 7,700 property owners didn't contest their value, which I think is the good way to look at it. So we expect that there'll be a number that will take some time to work through, number of appeals.
So how about the impact of COVID? A number of businesses, for example, last season just decided to close rather than to try to navigate the challenges. And also we have a lot of empty buildings that were at one time valuable businesses earning revenue. How does that affect the bottom line?
That's a good question. So the assessor is required to find fair market value, which means what a property would sell at an arm's length transaction. So if I sold you a property and we both agreed on the sales price, that would be an arm's length transaction. Whereas maybe if I sold a property to my son and I gave him a great deal, that's not arm's length. So the assessor has to find that value. And that's not always easy. I mean, think about the amount of time that people spend buying and selling one property, and the assessor's got to do that for 8,000. In this last year, we've had some business owners say, but we didn't make any revenue, or we didn't make any rent, or we weren't able to make any sales, which is a piece of the information. But the question is, how much would that property sell for today? It might not be for sale, but that's what state law requires, is you find that fair market value. And so that's what we're after.
And I would imagine that some people took advantage of COVID to improve their houses because they could be home and do some work. So I imagine that some homes have increased in value.
Yeah. So every year, the aggregate value of property in Juneau does increase with inflation and with rising sale prices of all types of properties, rising sale prices of homes, definitely in particular. Definitely there was a lot of renovation work done. It will take a while for the assessor probably to catch up to that because the assessor learns about value after the fact. The assessor can't predict what's going to happen in the future. And one of the things that's happened is over the last 10 or more years, the value of homes has increasingly paid a larger percentage of the share of the property tax, and commercial assessments have stayed flat. And that's probably not correct. And so the assessor is making the argument that we've been too low on commercial properties. And now that we've kind of mathematically discovered that issue, they feel obligated to raise the values to get to that fair market value.
Boy, and that's a challenging time to have to equalize it when a lot of businesses out there are struggling. But I suppose it needs to be done. I mean, what is the overall share of revenue from property taxes, both residential and commercial, for this community and borough?
So in the borough, we have about $50 million in property tax that we collect annually, and we have about $5 billion of taxable value in the borough. So it's real estate is a significant value of assets in CBJ, $5 billion in the whole borough.
So given that that is so valuable, you trust volunteers to weigh out the disputes? And why do you think that's a good idea to have people from the community that are maybe not professionals per se be involved in that process?
Well, I like to think of it, it's sort of a board of your peers. So in the same way that you have a jury, you know, jurors aren't trained to be professionals. They're trained to get advice on what the law is, listen to the arguments, and they have to decide. And the Board of Equalization has to decide as well. And so in one case, the assessor might say, look, I valued this property at $350,000, and here's why. And somebody else might provide competing information, and they just have to decide. Same way your elected officials on the assembly, they're not professional municipal policy people. They reflect the community. So with the BOE, it's really the same issue.
So in wrapping things up, what do people need to know if they are encouraged to pitch in here and serve on the BOE?
Contact the municipal clerks. You can go to the city website and find city clerk. If you hear this and it's easier and you know me, just shoot me an email and I'll forward it over to the clerks. We're just looking for people to be willing to volunteer some of their time. And if they need more information, they could call the clerks or Jeff Rogers, the finance director, and get more detail.
One of Newport communities around the world.
All righty. Well, I want to thank you very much, Rory, for joining us on Juno Afternoon. I know you're a busy guy, but we thank you for explaining what's behind the Equalization Board and why it's so important. Thank you.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Welcome to Juno Afternoon. Thank you for being here with us. I'm Rhonda McBride. We began a conversation on Friday with a group called Protect Juno's Future, which is rallying to fight three cruise ship initiatives that are currently in the petition signing phase. You can go to our Juno Afternoon page and find that interview in case you missed it. But today is our second installment of what we hope will be an ongoing conversation on the big cruise ships and their impact on our community. And joining us, Carla Hart and Sue Schrader, and maybe they are lead organizers of Juno Cruise Control, the group that is organizing this petition drive. But maybe we could start out with you, Carla, and then go to you, Sue, and talk about what prompted you. What was the defining moment that made you want to launch these initiatives?
The defining moment was 2019 in the fall when I spent a summer in Juneau, which I try to avoid in recent years, and just reached the point that I felt I needed to reach out to other people around the world who are impacted by cruise ships and to start talking to figure out what other people are doing, because we've been trying for 35 years and had no success. And so it was a specific moment of a helicopter when I started networking with other cruise activists, and through that network came to meet people and learn about a lot of other strategies being employed and a lot of other problems in the world with cruise industry.
Sue, how about you? What started you on this journey?
Well, Rhonda, I've been, my husband and I have lived in Juneau for 30 years. The first 18, we lived on Back Loop, and we were directly under the flight path of the flight seeing helicopters. I was a big gardener back then, and as the years went by and the helicopters got more frequent, it was very discouraging and very unsettling. So I got involved in all of the tourism issues, particularly the flight seeing noise. I was on the flight seeing mediation board that was set up, oh golly, I think around 2000, 2001. And we ultimately moved from Back Loop. And ironically, we moved in West Juneau, even though we're downtown. It's quieter from the flight seeing standpoint, but it has its own impact. So yeah, it was just thinking, whoa, you know, my summers are so negatively impacted. And that was 30 years ago, and it's only gotten worse, unfortunately.
But it seems like there are lots of moving pieces to some of the cruise ship challenges. Couldn't the helicopter piece be resolved without moving, you know, limiting the whole industry? Couldn't pieces of it be addressed?
Well, certainly, and that's indeed what we've been doing since 2000, so for the last 20 years. And indeed, as a result of the mediation, the flight seeing companies chose to alter their routes. So on clear days, when we're not having a lot of clouds, they do fly more over the mountains and less over populated areas. I would qualify that by saying populated by humans. if folks are out hiking, if you're going up to the John Muir Cabin, the Dan Moeller Cabin in the summer, you're still very much hearing a lot of flight seeing. But you're absolutely right. Flight seeing noise is one issue. The fixed wings addressed that issue pretty well a number of years ago. But I think for me personally, the flight seeing noise, and then as you mentioned, so many other aspects of the over tourism are combined.
We mentioned
one of the challenges.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
One of the challenges you get, Rhonda, is as you're building the capacity and there's a market and profits to be made in these activities, there's what's called the tragedy of the commons, where you get more and more entrants into something when you have a market available. And with the helicopters, they can only fly so many remote routes before they start worrying about running into each other, literally. And so if we go up to 2 to 3 million passengers and they want proportionately the same number of tours, you start getting more helicopter tours, more bus tours, more sightseeing into more neighborhoods because they need to create more capacity. And then the whale watching boats and what's gone on at Auk Bay, I think, is another real glaring example of something that we don't have the legal capacity to regulate. It either needs to be voluntary compliance by the operators, or we need to regulate their source of business, which is the cruise ships.
Well, one of the things that we said in our Friday discussion is that we're not at this point going to get down into the weeds and talk about a lot of the details and come back together for another conversation with several sides of this issue represented. But if you could give an overview of the main issues to help us kind of weigh this issue, digest the information we're getting from your perspective, what are the main points that we need to weigh and learn about?
I think a key point would be that Juneau as a community regulates and plans for almost all types of development, and we consider the impacts of those types of development in considering whether or not to permit them. The cruise industry operates in this really interesting realm outside of so much regulation and control that they have the capacity to bring a town or three or four small towns or five into our community for a day and basically say, we're coming and you need to prepare. and yet depending on us to have a lot of shoreside infrastructure available for them. So that would be one, is just the capacity issue and the right of the communities to say what we do and don't want, and to have some control over what happens in our communities.
Rhonda, I think over the years, many people have consistently spoken about the need for limits. And, you know, there again, that's a topic for a whole nother discussion. But as far as what's motivating us and what's behind these initiatives, it's limits. Yes. I mean, we are not trying to hide the fact we would like to see some limits on the growth, on the number of passengers, the size of the ships. It's interesting, as I've been out collecting signatures, there are two consistent themes I'm hearing from folks that are signing the petition. One is, why shouldn't we get these issues on the ballot? Why can't we vote? The opposition's telling us, don't sign. Well, that's taking away our right to vote. And it gives everybody, every voter, a voice. You can vote it down, you can vote it for it. There are three initiatives. You can vote for one, two, or three, vote against all of them. But let us vote.
So let me ask you this. Let me stop you here, because this to me is an interesting question. Why three initiatives? It seems like you have sort of a scattershot approach.
I'd say we definitely have a menu approach. There are three, as people know, who have looked at the initiatives. There are three different initiatives. And it's like, you like free Saturdays, but you don't like 7 to 7, fine. Vote for free Saturdays. It gives people a choice. And that is something that the Juneau residents have not had in so very, very long. I don't think we've ever really had a good choice on how to respond to the growing cruise ship industry.
So let's suppose that the cruise industry looks at this, they've fallen on hard times themselves by not having a season last year. And they say, okay, where are we going to go next? And maybe we won't go to this community that's got this petition drive going. And so in some sense, you may have, even without an election, accomplished your goal. And there are real worries that this petition drive may do that. How do you respond to that?
So Alaska is one of the most popular and profitable cruise destinations in the world. And that's why we're, in part, why we're seeing such massive growth. In entirety, the industry is growing globally. But Alaska is an extremely profitable market for the cruise industry because of all the shore excursions we offer, because they can offer higher pricing for Alaska cruises than for some other cruises. So they're here because they're making a lot of money. They're making more money than they can make with other ships at the same time. And it's a competitive market where we see a unity behind the Cruise Line Industry Association and a unity of the cruise industry in some respects. There are three really big players who are all in direct competition with each other for the same people. And then there are some smaller players. So if indeed someone decided to pull out and left us with some capacity that wasn't being used in our port, I strongly suspect that there would be someone else looking who would be interested in coming in. Norwegian Cruise Lines needs docks, their own docks in the region, because they were a somewhat latecomer to the Alaska market, relatively speaking, and the other brands have largely taken up sort of priority at the dock space that exists. So it's a competitive market. We're profitable for the industry. If we maintain the quality of our community as a destination and we get rid of some of our overcrowding that's diminishing our attractiveness to both independent travelers and cruise travelers and locals, then we'll be an even better destination.
So if we begin to weigh the pros and cons and perhaps the potential unintended consequences of some of these decisions, what do you think people need to learn about in this give and take? And if we have a future dialogue, what would you like to see talked about in depth?
I would really like to see an open discussion about the challenges of trying to predict the future. Protect Juno's Future has, of course, widely discussed the 75-78% reduction. The initiatives will take us back to the mid-1990s. That is highly speculative. Let's not forget that the cruise industry is nimble. They are flexible. It might take them 2 years to get their schedules together, but they can schedule ahead. The ships that are coming are bigger and bigger than ever. Even if we get just 5 ships a day in our harbor, those ships in a few years will be carrying upwards to 8,000 passenger and crew each. So both Juno Cruise Control and Juno Futures, Protect Juno's Future, are trying to look into that crystal ball and see what the cruise lines will do. But if we can look at the last 20 to 30 years, and we've looked at the numbers, they have only risen, and I believe they will only continue to rise.
So you are saying that the past is a predictor of the future. But is there room for compromise? Do you think that maybe this initiative process might get a dialogue going and maybe hold the city and boroughs' feet to this fire, so to speak, to take some actions to resolve what might be resolved in lieu of imposing harsh restrictions?
This is a measure that's taken with regard for the stress and the challenges that it creates for the community. We didn't just go into this as our first option. We truly have. I started speaking to the assembly in the late 80s, asking for us to plan for our future. And it hasn't happened. We keep kicking it down the road and saying we should do something. We should balance quality of life and cruise industry and independent tourism. We should, but it's never been done. And we've been told that legally we couldn't do things, but in interacting with other communities and other activists around the world, I learned that there are legal ways that you can do things to limit. There are also voluntary ways that the industry, that the same companies that are in Juno have voluntarily entered into agreements or abided by wishes of other communities. The cruise industry divides us and likes us to be isolated, but the truth is that they're reacting independently to each community. And in communities like Dubrovnik, they have voluntarily limited how many ships come into the port. So they have the capacity. We've never practiced our power in Juno to say either you do it or we'll do it. And so hopefully we can have a conversation now where the power isn't all held or perceived to be held by one party. The residents of Juno should have the say.
So to what extent is this a global movement?
Well, it's a global movement to the extent that the cruise industry is very global and visits hundreds of ports around the world. And the type of impacts they have on Juno are similar to or related to the types of impacts that they have on other communities, large and small, all over the world. They're really good at externalizing their costs and maximizing the profits that they retain for themselves. And I meet every 2 weeks with a group of activists from around the world under the Global Cruise Activist Network, and we compare notes and talk about what's happening in different places. And it's amazing how, whether you're in the Caribbean and you're dealing with coral being destroyed, or you're in Alaska and you're dealing with cruise ships plowing through icebergs and seals or whatever, there are environmental, there are human, there are social costs everywhere in the world from this industry, and they operate largely outside of any local control or laws.
Do you expect that this global perspective should be part of the dialogue going forward as people sort this out?
Well, we're all based in our community, so we're community activists who have finally started talking to compare notes. So think of us as the Cruise Line Industry Association of community activists. We finally started talking to each other and realizing that we have a lot of common interests. So I think that the global perspective is important in the sense that we aren't alone, and it's not just Juneau. I've had contact from city officials in Ketchikan who are interested in what we're doing. Skagway's talking about limits. It's not just Juneau, it's not just Alaska. Seattle's got an interest in cruise limits. So I think we should learn from each other globally. And the climate change impacts of the cruise industry certainly are global. But
I would just add to what Carla's saying, just to clarify that Juneau Cruise Control, although Carla and I and others do meet via Zoom with other global activists, Juneau Cruise Control is separate. We're independent. We are grassroots, wholly comprised of Juneau folks. We get no support, no funding from the global network of activists, which is, I can tell you, a very loose group. So to suggest that there's more, you know, that we're kind of scheming a global takeover is certainly not accurate. We are very much grassroots-based organization here in Juneau.
All righty. Well, we're going to have to leave it there, but I would really like to see us continue these conversations and have a bit more of an exchange, a back and forth. So I want to thank you very much, Carla Hart and Sue Schrader from Juneau Cruise Control, for being with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Thanks, Rhonda.
Support for Juneau Afternoon is provided by Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Klingit & Haida Social Enterprises. For more information, visit ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon.
And that will do it for Juneau Afternoon. I want to thank everyone for joining us. Have a great afternoon.